I've heard several rumors that there's something strange about mixing up the stock exchange with Zen. They don't think it can be done. But a good Zen man can do it. In the first place, Zen is a form of Buddhism which more or less simplified the entire teaching with almost no emphasis upon philosophy and a tremendous emphasis upon action, or we might say a cultivated inaction. The whole principle of Zen is based upon the four hindrances described by Buddha. And the hindrances are the four lessons that every human being must learn in order to grow. And as one of these hindrances is the stock exchange, in principle. But the Zen man calls it wealth. Wealth is, to a large degree today, a matter of business, of investment, of speculation, of accumulation, of the formation of vast institutions and organizations for the advancement of economic interests. All these come under the heading of wealth, and wealth is the first hindrance that is studied by Zen. Now, the purpose of Zen is very simple in base. It is the individual clarifying the facts of life on all of the levels with which he is associated. We all have different life patterns, but we all live in the same basic life situation. And our adjustment to that situation is the secret of health or sickness, life or death, wealth or poverty. Now, the adjustment of the individual to his world is not what he's trying to do in most cases. What he is trying to do is make his world adjust to him. He expects to be master of every situation, and in due time he is mastered by every situation. He cannot achieve his primary goal, which is to be the ruler of the world. The only thing he can ever rule well and efficiently is himself. Now, in the hindrances as set forth by Buddha, there are four principal causes of trouble. These causes of trouble are not new. They have been with us since the dawn of time. We have known about them. We have read about them. We have passed through the conflicts and disasters which they have caused. But in the end, we deny them. We pay absolutely no attention to them. Our great structure of success is built first upon wealth. And wealth is a very antisocial pattern to begin with. It becomes critical when we realize the futility of it. One of the hindrances is described in Zen by a simple little verse that is a key to a great many truths. And the verse is a little poem, a koan. And the little verse reads, "The shadows of the bamboo brush the temple steps, but the dust is not raised." Now, that's a very subtle thought. In other words, it is only a shadow. And the shadow has no power, but it looks as though it does. It looks as though the shadow should raise the dust, but it's nothing but a shadow to start with, therefore it cannot. And most of the life that we live today is a shadow cast by something, and to which we give vitality and life and reality, but it has none. So we'll start a little bit now with the problem of a Zen man trying to work on the stock market. He's going to have troubles to begin with. For in the first reason, he was going to consider the stock market as one of the principal hindrances. If it is a principal hindrance, and stands in the way of growth, why bother with it? Why not make a law of some kind and abolish it? You don't abolish these things because the stock market is nothing but the long, selfish shadow of man himself. It is the way man wanted it to be, but it never could be. And as a result, from the beginning of time, most of the miseries of mankind have been based in wealth. To have it, to lose it, for someone else to have it. These are all disasters. And actually, what is wealth? It is a shadow. In the first place, it has no permanence. We live in a world in which we do not live forever. Therefore, nothing that we accumulate can stay with us more than a few years. So we give the first half of life trying to control a situation which we will lose in the second half of life, no matter how we try to live with it. We can accumulate all the wealth we want to, but as this little ball spins on around the sun, none of these things that we do have any permanent significance. It may be nice to have them for a while, but it is also hard to go through the process of loss. And the wealthy man does not die with any better conscience than the poor man. But we have this great secret of wealth. We have the problem of investing. We have the problem of multiplying industry. And from a button tree on the south end of Manhattan, we developed a great institution that now follows the time signals around the world, and 90% of humanity is hopelessly enslaved to some aspect of this system. The only ones that are free of it are the unfortunate aborigines who are luckier than they know. But here we have a world that is locked within a problem of buying and selling, a problem of shifting about, all forms of bookkeeping, all forms of taxes, and all forms of stock investments and investors and agencies for handling these things. And when it is all done, we have something like we had a few months ago, a minor shift in the financial situation that shook the world to its foundations. And to have as the foundation of security something that can evaporate that quickly indicates that we're not very wise in setting our institutions in order. We are not using the proper wisdom. Now, in the Zen man was in this position, the first thing he would do was to say, you're not born a broker or an investor. You're not even born a Zen man. You are born a person gullible to many things, insecure for the greater part of life, and living in a mild state of fear most of the time. So if you're going to be a Zen man or a stockbroker, there's certain disciplines you have to have. And the stockbroker doesn't have them, not a trace of them. A few agents may have a little of it because they are playing only with other people's funds. But for the most part, those who are handling the money situation believe in money. They believe firmly that money is important. And they believe that if it drops in New York, it will fall in Tokyo, and will gradually go around until it drops another degree in New York. It is one constant circle in which the lifeblood of a cultural system is invested in wealth. This is the thing that makes the world go round. We have more automobiles now than we have space for, but we have money enough coming in to start a new factory or two and start another enterprise, which will be stock shared by various people. We have more of nearly everything that we do not need. But the one thing that we need most of all, common sense, is in short supply. In fact, it's been back ordered for a long time. So here we have a man who wants to become a happy, well-adjusted, well-balanced investor or merchant. The first thing he has to do is really to become a Zen man. He has to get over the first of the great hindrances, and that is his belief in the sanctity of his own processes. He has to face the fact with perfect certainty of clarity. He cannot afford to make any speculation that he cannot afford. He cannot do anything that hazards his peace of mind. If he has more than he knows what to do with, that's different. But even then, we notice that the ones with the most suffer the most from a small loss. So it can't be based on that. But your stock expert must be a completely self-integrated person. He must be an individual balanced in pain and pleasure. He must be capable of taking loss as pleasantly as he takes gain. He must realize from the beginning that he is playing on a checkerboard and that nothing that he buys or sells has any value except what he puts on it. We are under an economic system, and everybody values these factors, but every so often we get a nasty bump when we try to progress these matters further. We are today in the collapse of a great financial system. We are in it because nobody had any background in Zen. All right, what is the necessary background in Zen? Zen was established within Buddhism by an East Indian prince from the state of Cochin who went to China when it became obvious he had too many older brothers to ever mount to anything politically in his own country. He became a monk and has been known over the world as Bodhidharma, in Japan as Dharuma. He is represented usually as a round, like an egg-shaped figure, wrapped up in a red robe all the way up, and nothing showing but his face, which has large eyes and a grimace. This is old Dharuma. In the toy department, you will find him in this little paper mache egg that he is made in. Usually has weights in the bottom so that you can't tip it over. And that was one of the principles of Zen, that you can't tip it over. No matter what happens, it comes back the way it ought to be. So this monk became the founder of a system of self-discipline that was to greatly affect most of the world. It has come down to us in many different forms, shapes, and sizes, but the original principle is the immutability of internal poise and control. As the first of the hindrances, the hindrance of wealth must be analyzed. The individual who invests must realize exactly what he is doing. He must realize that no matter how much he makes, he is not making anything. The same of his losses. He is shifting about an intangible sense of value that is violated every day and offers infinite opportunity for corruption. He is caught in a financial pattern based upon the single thought that wealth is important. Wealth is freedom. Wealth is a liberation from all forms of pressure, when in reality, wealth is the cause of most of the pressures that we suffer from. Having decided to become a Zen man in this matter, the investor must look upon his investment as a kind of symbol, something that he should learn from. And the big lesson he is supposed to learn from the whole thing is, don't do it. But it takes years and many collapses of empire to realize that the world civilization cannot be built upon wealth. We have regarded as wealth as the most desirable, the one permanent, worthwhile thing, but it is not. There has never been a civilization that has survived the abuse of it. There's never any indication that a world is better from the creation of wealth. It is more complicated, and we can see that today. We have all these nations struggling against each other, revolutions inside, outside conflicts, political ups and downs everywhere, armed forces using up vast amounts of public funds, and no peace in sight. And the whole problem is based upon the first hindrance, which is wealth, and the second hindrance, which is power or fame. The individual who can be a leader of something, who can be made dog catcher of the community, has a new estimation of himself. There is an aura of grandeur that builds up around the public servant, no matter how inept he may be as a person or how unnecessary he may be as an official. He is on his way to glory. I've known two or three rabid socialists who got appointed to some small office and became almost immediately very dominant believers in the monetary system. All it took was a little job, and you became part of a great thing. And this in itself brought with it a note of greatness. So the wealth-power combination are the first two hindrances. They both hinder the power of the individual to think straight. They make us all accept the misfortunes of the past as inevitable, and that to project them into the future is also inevitable. With all the talk that we hear all the time, there is no actual getting at the root of it. There is no real cure. There are only two processes, and one is to delay the inevitable, and the other is to modify it to some small degree and shift the weight onto something else. But there is no solution. You cannot solve a problem that has no solution except the abolishment of itself. Now, you cannot abolish it because you would have 50 revolutions in no time. So the Zen man simply says there's only one way of getting rid of it, and that is outgrow it yourself. There is no other way. There's a story in China of a great mandarin who, being very wealthy and in favor at court, bought a beautiful villa and a lovely garden and settled down to enjoy the glories and beauties of life. Not long afterwards, a wealthy industrialist who was not of the favored class also came into money through business and decided to buy the next property, the property right adjacent to that of the mandarin. When he got the property, maybe it was, we won't know for sure, but maybe it was the tiger bomb. Maybe it was the tiger bomb man that did it. But anyway, he got this villa next door, and he proceeded to lay it out so badly and so extravagantly that the Chinese cultured man next door was going into fits. He couldn't stand it. Every time he looked out of the window, he was antagonized. He was disappointed. He tried to buy the other property, but the man who had it said he'd put so much money into his beautiful garden, he wouldn't sell it. So there was no peace there. And the aristocrat would just sit, look out the window and wish something could be done about it. Finally, a Zen man, who was his friend, came to him and said, "What's the matter?" "Oh," he says, "this man's garden next door is driving me crazy. What can I do about it?" "Oh," the man said, "it's a very simple thing to do. You don't have to buy it out. You don't have to do anything." Well, he says, "What do you mean?" So the Zen man got up, looked out the window, turned to the rich man, and pulled the shutter across. And he says, "You're cured. You don't have to see it anymore." And that is somewhat the way Zen handles this type of thing. It handles it in a way in which no great surface is moved, but the individual's relationship with the things around him is markedly changed. Next, the point is that a hindrance is always a lesson. A hindrance is always an examination. It is a way of testing the integrities and values of things. And the four great hindrances of Buddhism are tests of your own character to prove whether you are strong enough to graduate from the grammar school, which we call modern life. If we want to escape it, we have to outgrow it. There's no way of eluding the responsibility of personal growth. Therefore, if wealth is a problem, as it is in the world today, and there's no nation free of it, and there's no nation enjoying it. It used to be that the rich family lived on the hillside with a beautiful home, and everyone was just jealous of them. Today, the rich family is just as badly off as the poor family. There's something wrong. Maybe the money has spoiled the whole family. But whatever it is, nothing is right. And it is all wrong because of emphasis. Because we are not using these different instruments to advance our integrities, we're using them to cater to our desires. And there's a great deal of difference between those two points of view. So the Zen man would point out that wealth is probably the basic problem today in the world. Almost everything, to a degree at least, is dependent upon the monetary system. The monetary system is used not only to forward purposes, but to buy various forms of delinquency. The monetary system is abused to distraction at the present time, and it's going to probably be a little worse. It is going to be worse until we realize that it was not a blessed discovery, but what the Zen man calls a hindrance. It was one of the things that stands between the individual and himself. It is something that he is allowed to take over from the outside, the values of his life. He lives under the pressures these outside things have created, and he has no time, no energy, no life left to release his own potential. He is forced to live constantly over-influenced by his environment. Now, of course, one of the problems in this field is education. We hear all about education. We watch the books and textbooks that are issued. Listen to the various accounts of what should be done with education. But we do not find any clear statement for young people as we would find it in the case of the Zen man. The Zen man would say that education is the individual growing up into his own maturity, and he must be helped by whatever means helps him to be himself and does not merely make him a profitable unit in something that has no existence to start with. In other words, the education of today is to fit us into the economic theory rather than to help us to raise it, improve it, or escape from it. And it's the same thing with all investment problems. The investment is more or less the heart of the entire economic system. It all depends for the circulation throughout the arterial structure of economy that the financial situation be kept above water. It must be maintained. But it's reaching a point where it cannot be. And it never was really solvent. There's never been a time when there's really been solvent in the sense of security. It's always been that your securities were insecure. And this is a very important point. So in the Zen man, if you're going to really understand it, must understand in perspective just how small this world is and how little greatness there is in it. This little world, which is floating around in space, is accredited as being so important that we have killed each other by the tens of thousands and the tens of millions simply to own pieces of it. And it keeps right on going, indifferent of us. It never knew we existed. It doesn't care. The whole struggle is a fight in a sandbox. The individual fighting with a shadow or another individual over something that neither one of them can ever possess. All of this financial problem, therefore, is a hindrance. It's a hindrance to growth. Now, a Zen man might say, what is growth? What can we do to make this situation one of permanent value to ourselves? The answer is, to grow means to outgrow or overgrow a condition that exists. Growth is a progress. It is not measured in wealth, is not measured in national incomes or products or in sales and investments, growth is an unleashing of a greater measure of enlightenment. Growth is to become wiser, better, and happier. And the civilization that we now have will not confer these virtues upon us very easily. A happy person today who is not simply mentally deranged is very far hard to find. And even the happiness we have is very perishable and can be dispersed or destroyed by some passing event. So the Zen man starts by saying, what do we need? What is the thing that we're trying to do? We have come into this world with a gift of some nature. We have a mind capable of thinking. We have a heart capable of loving. We have a body capable of serving. We have all kinds of opportunities. And we have an ingenuity with which to invent and devise things. Now, if all these abilities are used properly, we are a very constructive unit in society. We are something that can help others and can help ourselves. But our primary purpose is to unfold through ourselves the universal truths that are the foundation of existence. We are here to manifest reality. We are here to accomplish in daily action the wonders that we read about in books. We are simply not here to be better than our neighbor. We are here every day to be a little better than ourselves. There is no place in growth for competition. The moment competition comes in, ulterior motive is there, and Zen dies. Years ago, there were a series of articles in the New Yorker on Zen, and one of them had to do with Zen in athletics, Zen in tennis, Zen in golf, Zen in archery. And a lady who was the wife of one of the writers did an article, Zen and Flower Arrangement. Zen was therefore the effortless effort by means of which the simple reality in ourselves will come out if we don't block it. The individual who tries to be good seldom succeeds. The individual who becomes within himself a better person is good without frustrating any of his natural inclinations, because his inclinations have been purified. Therefore, in the problem of Zen with all these things, the first thing is to discipline the self in value. What is important? What is valuable? What is the greater good to the greater number? What is it that does not finally turn like a venomous reptile and destroy the creature that fashioned it? We do not all want to form some monster of Frankenstein. We do not want to create a civilization that is a continuous blight upon humanity and the earth. So we have to understand things and accept them as facts. The narcotic addict takes a few shots of something or other and feels for the moment that he is 10 feet tall and forgets altogether, entirely, that it won't be long before he will be 6 feet under. No, doesn't think of that. He'll take a larger dose the next day because of that moment when he feels so big. Zen says you can have the biggest moment of your life and it be honest and true and real, and doesn't need any drugs to fortify it. The moment the inside begins to take domination over the outside, a better part of ourselves becomes obvious. We have within our own nature the power to accomplish any reform that is necessary upon ourselves. We can gain any skill that we wish to of ourselves. We can have just the kind of an environment we want if we create it ourselves and preserve it. So that everything that is good is available, but it is blocked by the hindrances. It is blocked by the individual who cannot be happy unless he is a billionaire. It is blocked by the idea that he must be wealthy, that he must have summer homes, and that he must dissipate and various ways danger and so on. All of this is based upon the fact that to have is to be happy. The Zen man would then suggest that you try to find this happy, wealthy man. And you will find that he is burdened with all the problems that life can possibly bestow upon him. There's a story in the Muslim world about the great emperor who was told by his soothsayer that he was dangerously ill, and the only thing that could cure him would be if he could wear for one day the shirt of a happy man. So they sent the couriers all over the world to find the happy man so they could bring the shirt to the emperor. And finally, one of the emperor's servants came back to him and said, "Sire, I don't know what we're going to do. We have found your happy man, but he doesn't have a shirt." That is good Zen. It is based upon the simple concept that the integrities of life are the only things that survive. The human being is part of something bigger only when he consciously becomes part of something bigger. He's a little being on this earth with a stock exchange, but this has little or nothing to do with his citizenship in the universe. The Zen man is looking to be a citizen of the universe, a good citizen in right standing. He must be correct. He must have the enlightenment. So he goes to discipline. Now, the Daruma, who was the founder of it all, in this particular case, has left some very interesting examples and recommendations as to what will help the individual to gain this detachment. And the first thing that Daruma pointed out is that you cannot be deluded, miserable, and mistaken unless you are ignorant. And any form of knowledge which does not help you to overcome the hindrances in yourself is not knowledge. It is some kind of a mistake that is masquerading under credentials, but it is not honest. No form of learning that does not help you to overcome your own faults as they are in society is really educating you. It is giving you a Siwash polish. It is making possible for you to go out and cheat somebody else. But this has nothing to do with becoming a better person. Education has not emphasized that the true human being is one who can live with himself without breaking the laws of nature or without destroying the happiness of others. This type of knowledge we don't have. We can go, perhaps, and put another shuttle on the moon or something and become very excited about it. And the same day this happens, somebody drops a bomb somewhere. We have no realization of the interrelationship between knowledge, as we gain it here, and wisdom. Is it a natural and eternal foundation? We cannot say that any person is educated who has enemies or makes them. We cannot say that anyone is educated who can't hold a home together. We cannot say anyone is educated who doesn't keep the reasonable laws of human courtesy. The drunk driver on the freeway may be a graduate of a great university, but he is completely uneducated. Education is to become aware of the realities. And when we apply this to the stock exchange, we have to say we have to become aware of the motivations of the values, principles, and technical processes by which this institution is maintained. And if we do this, we will begin to discern day by day more and more of the illusion that has been taken to mean success. We will become more and more aware that in that problem, we are not only in great danger of physical, financial loss, but even greater danger of moral and spiritual loss. The individual who has his mind all his life on stocks and bonds is not getting very far in the release of the divine potential within himself. The nature that set us up in the first place would have given us a built-in computer or something if we were supposed to have it. But we're not. we're supposed to grow and release through experience, dedication, insight, and thoughtfulness the values of the natural world we live in. We are here to understand the planet, not destroy it. We are here to use its various values, not abuse them. We are not here to make the planet into a dead body by draining out it every bit of life that is in it. We were given a beautiful planet to live on, and we were given the keys and the knowledge of how to take care of it. Therefore, it's up to us to do it. And that's what we're not doing at the present time. We are allowing these atomic wastes and things to accumulate with the full knowledge that someday those accumulations are going to break through. Our only hope seems to be they won't break through on us, but they're going to be faced by our children and their children. We are simply not recognizing that there is an overall philosophy of life that must be obeyed. We are not using the knowledge that is naturally available to us. And one of the great reasons why we condone wealth and condone these things is because we believe in the concept of power. We believe that the powerful person is a success. We can't prove that he lasts any longer than anybody else, but we feel that it is a great success to be a page and a half in the encyclopedia. That means you've really done it. But when it comes to putting you away, you're just exactly like everyone else. The path of glory leads but to the grave. And why then make such a problem out of glory? Every one of the things that is getting us into trouble gets us there because we believe in it, because we have been deluded into accepting it, that we have mistaken one value for something that was not valuable. All these things are part of what we must face in the years that lie ahead. We must face the problem of distinction. Now, at the present moment, we have a great example of fame going sour on us. We have an example now of what happens to a reputation that runs for politics. Everything that we do, everything that we try to earn, turns upon us, and every ordinary mistake we make is magnified, and our virtues are forgotten in this comparative structure that we call civilization. We are not in the world to be famous, and no one's life is that famous if we get close enough to it. It is only famous until a Snoopy reporter finds out. Then it isn't famous anymore. But why do we work, therefore, so hard to push our way into some public position with a full realization that a good Zen man wouldn't be found dead there? It is simply the fact that we have a completely wrong standard of values. And this standard of values is killing us. It's allowing us to neglect and forget the great basic principles of truth upon which the human race was based. So the second hindrance is the definite effort to get ahead, to get to a higher position, to have a little more wealth, to show a little more of our abilities. And pretty soon we are going to be in a position where we can't even buy the necessities of life. We go through one cycle of financial inflation after another, and for what? This little ball floating in space has no more surface than we see. It has no more under the surface than is there, and we're depleting it as rapidly as possible. When we completely deplete the interior and completely demolish the exterior, where are we? We're not going to graduate to a better planet, because we will have failed the examination here. To get this thing straight, we've got to return the planet to nature in as good a condition as we found it. And we should be finding ways to improve the stability of the planet and not the financial cupidity of the inhabitants. We are just approaching the whole thing in a completely wrong way. Now, if the Zen man was involved in something like this, he would point out another factor that comes into our thinking, which doesn't necessarily represent general public thinking. if we are, as Socrates said, if we are to live beyond the grave, if some part of us goes on, then we may have to face the answers to a great many questions. He did not believe in damnation, but he believed that the individual might have to discover how ignorant he had been, which would be a great shock to him, especially his ego. Or, on the other hand, is he going down to a silence and will never be heard of or seen or thought of again? Is he a mortal creature with nothing beyond the grave? With either perspective, I think Socrates is more or less correct. If you do not have any life beyond this one, live this one as well and fully as you can. If there is a life beyond this one, if there is something afterwards, then prepare for that by revealing the very best of your nature and turning this world into a school where you learn something every day. We are here to learn, not luxuriate, and we've lost sight of those valuable points. Then we also have another point, another hindrance, and that hindrance is a problem that we call vice. Hindrance is largely a matter of providing the funds to allow the individual to dissipate in any manner possible without being able to be properly punished. He will buy his exemption from the natural consequences of his own conduct. This is available to us in every newspaper today. It is present in our attitude towards entertainment, towards literature, towards art, towards music. Everything shows a complete disregard for the very plan that produced us. Here we are, very complicated creatures. The human body is one of the greatest mysteries of all time. Whatever it was that created it, fashioned it, or put it together, was a genius beyond anything we can even conceive. Here we are in the presence of an absolute miracle. And then we turn around and feed it with heroin and cocaine. We have not thought about the values of anything. We want to have that feeling of superiority. We want to spend more. We want to have more vices and more moral delinquencies than anybody else. This is great. But what is it all to? Nothing. Now, it seems to me that one of the problems we're facing now in the shift into another century is that we cannot go on as we have. We cannot keep on with this process of constantly breaking every rule in a desperate effort to be happy. We cannot go on destroying our earth right out from under us. We cannot continue to abide by simple selfishness. We've got to find ways of doing things right, doing things with discipline and order. Now, one way, of course, is ordinary education. Our ordinary education, if the textbooks were honestly written and the courses were honestly taught and the running the institutions were sufficiently enlightened to know the difference between reality and error, we would be much further ahead. But we cannot expect this or demand it at the moment, although it is definitely coming. At the moment, we can depend only on what we can do. And it may well be that the average person who wants to have a better life may have to start educating himself after the schools have given him all they can. He may have to build his own Zen life, which is something in which he begins to impose a discipline upon his own spoiled nature. If you neglect a child up to its 10th or 12th year, you're going to have a lot of trouble with it. If you neglect the adult human being after middle life who has had no training in doing things right, you're going to have a difficult time, and so is that person. Yet it is necessary for each individual who wishes to get out of any problem he's in, and nearly everyone is in several, is to begin the cultivation of an internal life that is appropriate to the needs. So Zen says, do it by various small, short steps at first. Do things that you think can be done with proper propriety. Keep appointments correctly. Get over pushing anything into the future that needs solution now. Stop trying to be happy all the time with pleasures that mean nothing. Try to escape, for instance, the hypnosis of the television. Try to not become completely addicted to the dynamic divinity of the computer. Let us gradually recognize that the products of our ingenuity are interesting, but it is the being that created these products and can create still better ones that is something to be considered and given attention.